A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program. Going to continue our conversation with ATF Director Robert Sakata and ATF Chief Counsel Robert Leiter today. And I want to get started. You know, it's been interesting to see the criticisms of the gun control lobby to what's going on at the ATF, right? And it's understandable. You know, under the Biden administration, the gun control lobby had an office in the White House, right? They were not able to get one of their own installed as the ATF director, David Shipman, a former ATF agent who went to work for Giffords, was Joe Biden's original nominee, but could not gain enough support among Democrats to get confirmed. So instead, they went with Steve Dettelbach, former U.S. attorney, former, I believe, gubernatorial or senatorial candidate from Ohio, a guy who, you know, was in favor of banning so-called assault weapons and basically went along with all of the Biden administration's attacks on the firearms industry and on gun owners, whether it was the engaged in the business rule, the pistol brace rule. Dettelbach had a major role in that, and the gun control groups were very happy with what the ATF was doing to target the firearms industry and to target gun owners. All of that changed when Donald Trump took over. And so, yeah, understandably, they're ticked off. I get it. But the complaints are really interesting. Everytown's smoking gun website, for instance, recently ran a piece that was very critical of Robert Sakata for talking to Newsmax, for talking to Colleen Noir, for giving his opinion about state-level gun laws. And there was a bit of pearl clutching, right? Like, how dare he do this? How dare he open himself up to interviews with the right-wing commentators? So this was something that I asked Robert Sakata about when I had the chance to sit down with him and Rob Leiter. If given the opportunity, would you also sit down with Jennifer Macia from The Trace? I think that's how you pronounce her name. Would you sit down with somebody from Giffords Law Center or Everytown for Gun Safety? And the answer that I got actually really surprised me. Take a look and a listen.
Yeah, so I have. So I've sat with Everytown, Giffords, and Brady. As a matter of fact, in last year, let me go back real quick to the last administration. There was a much more overt interactive relationship with Brady, Giffords, and Everytown when the last administration was in and Director Dettelbach was here. No issues, right? We had relationship with the industry as well, maybe not as much as we should have. But I think that as soon as we got into 2025, we were in a bad position. Our agency was in a bad position. I was very much focused on, plugging all the holes to make sure we didn't sink. But once we got things under control, as I said, I didn't hear from folks publicly offering to help ATF and defend ATF as an agency that's critical to protecting public safety. I reached out. I said, hey, we haven't heard from you guys. And, you know, last administration, we had a regular interaction with everyone. I'd like to invite you to come over to headquarters. And we did. We invited folks over. They came over and some have been over more than once to have a discussion. Whether we agree or not doesn't matter, right? But we should be able to have a conversation with one another. You know, the one thing I take issue with folks is it's very easy to hypothesize on how to make the world a safer place. It's not so easy to go out there and do what my folks do every day. I don't do it anymore, but I did for almost 30 years of my life. Put a vest on, go put a gun on in a neighborhood that you don't know, and you're risking your life to make someone else's neighborhood safer. I don't need these folks criticizing my people and saying we're not doing our job, because I can tell you on the criminal enforcement side, we have approximately 200 less agents than I had in 2024 to date from January 20th of 25. We've seized almost 50,000 illegal firearms from violent armed offenders that are committing violent crimes in our country, almost 3 million rounds of ammunition that was possessed illegally by violent offenders, gang members, or was bound for the cartels in Mexico, again, to do heinous violent acts. So I don't want to hear it. I just don't want to hear it. We are doing our job. Yes, we are making the improvements to the regulations that are required to treat the American people fairly and to be in compliance with the president's Second Amendment executive order. But we're also holding criminals accountable.
Now, I don't think I've seen any gun control organization acknowledge that they've met with Robert Sakata. I don't recall seeing any, whether it's Everytown, Giffords, Brady, any of them. I can't recall any statement that indicates that they've actually met with Robert Sakata while he's been director of the ATF, much less that he invited them to ATF headquarters. So I find it very disingenuous, to put it mildly, that Everytown is attacking Sakata for talking to people like Colleen Noir or Newsmax when he's clearly willing to sit down with them too. Right? But then again, I mean, should we really expect honesty from the gun control lobby? I don't think so. Also thought it was interesting, clearly Sakata is, I think it's pretty clear anyway that Sakata is ticked off that the gun control groups are bashing him, bashing the agency's, let's say, new direction. Without coming to the defense of the ATF when, the administration was talking about maybe we can roll the ATF into the DEA. What's interesting is they actually had Second Amendment groups come out and say, that's a bad idea. Right. Not that we like the NFA, not that we like the Gun Control Act. In a perfect world, would the ATF even exist? Probably not. But as long as you got the regulations, as long as you've got the laws in place, then there has to be some agency that's going to enforce those laws. And I think this is something that Robert Sakata is very cognizant of and very open about talking about the overreach by the ATF in the past and getting back to the core mission of going after violent offenders. Working with the industry as a partner, not as an adversary, and respecting the rights of gun owners instead of trying to put them in prison, instead of trying to restrict their rights or entrap them. I think it's fair to say that it is a new day at the ATF. In fact, just this week, Robert Sakata has been very active on social media, both pushing back on critics like Rachel Maddow, Marianne Mitchum, who actually used to work for ATF and then went to go work for Everytown. She's like the new David Chipman. But Sakata's also been responding to people, just average everyday gun owners who, present him with a question, talking to them back and forth in direct messages. It's really kind of astounding to see. And I think that, again, this is another indication that Director Sakata understands that the ATF has some work to do in terms of repairing its reputation, but also legitimately in terms of getting back to what he views as the core mission, which is not to harass lawful gun owners, which is not to try to put the firearms industry out of business or to even see this as the enemy. But to, again, disrupt gun trafficking networks, to take violent offenders off the streets, things that I think even Second Amendment advocates would say, yeah, you do that, we don't have a problem, right? But the regulatory overhaul is also, I think, a really big step for the ATF. And Robert Leiter, the chief counsel of the ATF, is instrumental in these proposed rules that have been introduced. And I asked him, because Leiter is also a law professor at George Mason University, a role that he continues to hold, by the way. I asked him what made him decide to join the ranks of the bureaucracy. What made him decide, OK, I'm going to I'm going to go work for the ATF here. And I found his answer very surprising and revealing as well. Take a look and a listen.
I mean, I still have that position, but from the outside, there's only so much you can do. You can write about it. You can try to persuade other people. But the great thing about being in the government is that you're in a position to do something about it. And I got a call from a friend who was aware that I knew a lot in this area, and he asked if I wanted to come help the administration with its Second Amendment policies. And I was excited by the opportunity. From the outside, I had a lot of areas where I had concerns about how ATF was going about its regulations. And I didn't just want to be on the outside writing about it. I wanted to have an opportunity to actually fix it. And if you want to fix it, you have to come do it. And so that's what motivated me to come in. And I've had the fortunate opportunity to work on what is the most significant regulatory project since at least the 1990s, and perhaps since 1968. And it's been very rewarding. It's not just the regulations. I mean, just coming here, this agency does a lot more than just the regulatory. It has a whole criminal enforcement side. And being able to do this kind of work, it's been quite rewarding, and it's been a great learning experience for me. So I've enjoyed it, and I hope to give back to the community as well. I had a lot of knowledge, a lot of studying of the issue, but this is also my chance to give back.
So Leiter's reply led to, a natural follow-up, which is, so how much work has been done? How much work do you have left to do, right? I mean, we've seen more than 30 proposed rule changes introduced. Public comment period is underway for most of these rules. And by the way, you should definitely go and take advantage of the opportunity to comment, because the gun control lobby is. We've already seen one proposed rule get rescinded because of adverse reaction. And this was not all coming from the gun control lobby, to be fair. There were some FFLs who had expressed concerns about this particular rule, and it's possible that it gets revised and then introduced once again based on concerns from FFLs. But this is your opportunity to weigh in. So do take advantage of the public comment period. But again, with more than 30 regulations introduced or 30 rule changes introduced, how much more is there left to do? Here's what Rob Leiter had to say.
Well, we're not halfway done yet. So the regulations are just notices of proposed rulemaking. And as you can see from the outside, it took us about a year to roll them out. There will be a second round of this. So at this point, we're getting comments back from the public. And those comments might say, this regulation's good, this regulation's bad, or this regulation's mostly good, but it needs to be tweaked in these ways. And we have to take all that information in now, analyze it, and figure out whether we should move forward with the policy, change direction, or move forward but alter what we're doing. So that will be a fairly intensive process. We are not done on the regulation front. These were the first 34 rules to go out, but we are continually evaluating the regulations and trying to figure out where we can promote efficiencies, where we can get rid of regulations that are not in accordance with law or are unnecessarily confusing. So there will be a lot more to come. And it's not only regulations that we're doing too. We're also looking at how ATF operates and trying to make sure that, for example, when ATF conducts inspections, that those inspections accomplish our responsibilities to make sure that dealers operate in compliance with the law without using the inspections as pretext for other political agendas. So it's not just, you know, the public, the regulations are the most public-facing side of what we do, but there's been a lot of internal reform as well.
So my thanks once again to Robert Sakata and Robert Leiter of the ATF. We've got more to come, by the way. I think we'll continue this and maybe wrap it up on Monday. But it was a lengthy interview. I mean, these guys sat down with me for almost an hour. And, you know, again, we talked about a variety of subjects. They probably would have gone even longer, but they had to get back to work. So, again, I do appreciate their time, and we'll share more of this conversation coming up on the next Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story. our good deed of the day and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Savannah, Georgia. Downtown Savannah mass shooting suspect pleads guilty. Suspect in Ellis Square 2024 shooting is sentenced, terms of plea agreement revealed. And what a plea deal it turns out to be. According to Chatham County Superior Court records, Cesar Purnell Cooper ended up pleading guilty to one count of aggravated assault. As part of the agreement, prosecutors dismissed three additional aggravated assault charges, as well as four counts of possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. A judge sentenced Cooper to 10 years, with 2 years to serve in prison and the remaining 8 years on probation. And he will receive credit for time served starting on May 31st of 2024. So you do the math. 2 years in prison. He's been in jail awaiting trial for over 2 years. Yeah, Cesar Cooper is basically walking out of jail a free man right now. The plea deal also prohibits Cooper from returning to Savannah except for court appearances, legal proceedings, or other approved circumstances. Cooper was arrested a couple of weeks after the shooting in Ellis Square. 11 people ended up injured, 10 suffering gunshot wounds. Nobody was killed. Apparently an argument escalated into a gunfight involving multiple people. Cooper was one of several suspects charged in connection with the shooting, and his plea deal was approved by a judge on July 2nd. He also has to complete 40 hours of community service, so whoa. I don't even know what to say about this. I mean, again, we're told that these mass shooting incidents, and this isn't an active shooter incident. This was, you know, again, this was a large group of people getting together, fight breaks out, guns are pulled, shots are fired. We're told that these are serious crimes, right? Is this in the message that this is a serious crime? You get a plea deal that results in a potential 10-year prison sentence, of which 80% is immediately turned into probation. And the remainder of that sentence is the time that you've already spent behind bars awaiting trial. So essentially, you're done. You're free to go. I don't see that as much more than a slap on the wrist, unfortunately. I hope it was enough that Cesar Cooper does not come back before a judge accused of violating his probation with other criminal offenses. I hope that's the case, but I have to say I'm just not particularly optimistic. Now on to today's armed citizen story from Iowa. No charges filed after a shot fired outside of a Meta facility in Altoona. I did not know that there was a Meta facility in Iowa. I also didn't know that there was an Altoona, Iowa. I thought that Pennsylvania was the only one. This was yesterday morning, about 7:15. Police officers in Altoona called out to this Meta facility on a report of a shot fired. While officers were on their way, dispatchers told them that there were no reported injuries and that the armed person had already left the property. Officers and detectives secured the area, started talking to witnesses. They obtained a description of the person and their vehicle, which was shared with surrounding law enforcement agencies. Less than an hour later, the individual was found in Marion County, Iowa, and was detained without incident. The situation was all captured on video, and that video turned out to be consistent with witness statements and accounts from those involved. This did not actually happen in the Meta facility, but like outside of the Meta facility. In fact, the people involved were not Meta employees, but were contracted through a third-party company. They don't live in Iowa. According to the Altoona police, a disagreement between two people escalated into what they described as a physical altercation. During that altercation, the armed person drew his gun, fired at least one round towards the ground in an attempt to de-escalate the situation, and then left the area. According to KCCI, after reviewing video evidence, witness statements, and consulting with the Polk County Attorney's Office, investigators determined that the armed person acted in self-defense and no charges were filed. That's good, and I'm glad that this individual was able to protect themselves. I do have to say, though, that generally firing shots into the ground, not a good idea. Any more than firing a warning shot into the air is a good idea. When you are using deadly force, you need to be responding to a threat against your life. And there are certainly going to be some jurisdictions where a warning shot, whether fired into the air, fired into the ground, police are going to go after you for unlawful discharge of a firearm. Prosecutors are going to go after you as best they can. That can still lead to criminal charges. So I'm not a big fan of the idea of warning shots, because I think that they are legally dubious under the best of circumstances, and in some jurisdictions, just, again, outright forbidden. Thankfully, in this case, he's not facing any charges, and the incident is wrapped up. All right, finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place. At the right time, wasn't able to do the right thing. A convenience store clerk in Bakersfield, California, who ended up rescuing a child who had run into traffic. And this is such a weird and sad and disturbing story. I hope that by rescuing this child who had run out into traffic, this individual actually ended up rescuing a child from what seems to be a pretty awful situation. Nova Singh is the manager of the Easy Stop there in Bakersfield. He said, "I just noticed that there was a little baby walking across the street running through traffic, and he just so happened to be running towards the store entrance, so that's when I ran out and I grabbed him and I brought him inside." This was about 7:15 in the morning. Pretty heavy traffic on the road. No parents around. In fact, authorities still haven't said much at all about the family situation for this child. And despite Singh's description of the child, this wasn't a little baby. There's an image with the face blurred off. You can see that's a pretty big child right there. Estimated to be about 5 or 6 years old, wearing nothing but a diaper. Singh said he was really dirty. He had special needs. He wasn't talking much. He was probably scared. And when he was running through the street, he was looking back and forth like he'd been out there for a while. Wasn't in good shape, he said. No shoes or clothing. Singh said that he was disappointed that nobody intervened to help before he did. He said, no cars stopped. He said 4 or 5 cars passed by. None of them stopped. And he said, I just brought him in here. He said, I called the police just to tell them there was a little kid running through the streets. Singh says he stopped working, held the child's hand until a deputy showed up. He said, customers want their transaction taken care of. They don't care about anything else. He said, a lot of people are in their own little world. They're busy, but we have to look out for each other. If we don't, who else will? One of the cashiers of the Easy Stop, Rain Morales, said, this is a terrible street. People are getting struck by cars every other day on the street. So she was very thankful that this child was rescued. Says, as a mom, the footage was unsettling. She said, it was terrifying because something way worse could have happened. As of yesterday afternoon, the Kern County Sheriff's Office spokesperson said they're working to get more information on the child's identity and situation. And again, I'm trying to reserve judgment. I know I've told this story before, but when I was 2 years old, we just moved to a house in Oklahoma City. I was in the backyard playing with mud, and we had just gotten a dog a few weeks before, a little puppy at that point. My mom went inside to make me lunch. Somehow I managed to get the latch on the fence undone. My dog and I walked out and ended up on a busy 4-lane road, one of the main thoroughfares in Oklahoma City, Southwest 89th Street. And I'm walking down the median with my little dog in tears, and two nice old ladies in a car stop. I couldn't tell them where I lived. We just moved. I didn't know my address, but they were able to follow my dog back home. And at that point, my mom had already called the police. She's flipping out. My mom was a good mom. She was not a neglectful parent. This was not a case of child neglect. So I am trying to keep an open mind here. I really am trying to keep an open mind. But boy, there sure are a lot of indications here that this kid may not have the best home life. And I hope that the authorities will do their best to ensure that this kid is taken care of going forward. And I thank this Good Samaritan there in Bakersfield, California, Nova Singh, for being in the right place at the right time and being willing and able to do the right thing. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again on Monday. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com between now and then, because we're going to keep you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from across the nation. You know, I would say it's a pretty slow time of year. I mean, we don't have a lot of state legislatures in session right now. But, man, it's a lot of legal stuff going on. The fallout from the Rahimi and Wolford decisions is starting to, you know, trickle down through the lower courts. And we're still seeing, you know, some cases of that have really nothing to do with Wolford or Hermione, cases that have been underway for quite some time. Those are getting decided. Got a fascinating story out of New York, actually, at the website today, and an infuriating story involving a couple on Long Island who had their pistol permits suspended, had their firearms confiscated because their daughter had told a school counselor that she was feeling depressed and had thought about harming herself with a rope. Even though the parents did everything right, they took their daughter to a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist said, listen, she's not in any danger of hurting herself. They had their license again. They had their guns taken from them. They had their guns stored. The police knew they had their guns stored in locked safes. They were inaccessible to their child. 3 years after their guns were taken and their permits were suspended, they do not have their guns back. It is, again, infuriating. There is some hope on the horizon. And we cover that again at the Bearing Arms, as well as a lot more. So be sure to check out the website. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Use the promo code FIGHT, and you can get 60% off your membership, no matter what tier of support you choose. And no matter what tier you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. So I want to thank you for that, because it really does make a difference, and it does mean a lot. Whether you're a VIP member, VIP Gold, VIP Platinum, you get some great benefits. Those benefits scale up. Obviously, as you go from VIP to VIP Gold to VIP Platinum. Our VIP Gold and Platinum members, one of the cool things is we do a weekly live chat every Wednesday, 1:30 Eastern, typically is when it's held. Hot Air's Ed Morrissey and myself sit down with our VIP Gold and Platinum members. We talk about the news of the day. Sometimes it's very 2A-centric. Sometimes it's not. Kind of depends on what the news is. And then generally once a month, we have like an after party where we just hang out on a Zoom call for another hour or so around dinner time, a little bit later. And just enjoy each other's companies. It really is great. And I hope that you can be a part of it. So again, be sure to check it out. Go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT and take 60% off your membership. Have a great rest of your week. Look forward to talking to you again very soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.